This is Kathy Fishel, Real One. And if I could ask you, first of all, Kathy, to tell me about your background. Whereabouts were you born and brought up? Yes.
I was born in Liberec, which was called Reichenberg, but that was only the nursing home. I grew up in Jablonec, which is a Czech name, but it was an entirely German part. It was in the Sudets. And my father had how would one call it, the distribution of the tobacco that was a government, the government gave this out, so that he distributed it to the whole of Northern Bohemia, which meant that all the small shops and so on came to us. And I remember these huge dray horses in our yard, when I occasionally was allowed to sit on one. He had that towards the end of the Austro-Hungarian monarchy, but the Czechs took him over, and until we left for Prague, he still had this, and we were fairly comfortable. My parents were. There was a very great difference in age. My father was very much older than my mother. My mother's parents and family were in Prague, but my grandmother married when she was 17. It was a great love affair, and they moved to Warnsdorf, where my grandfather was a director in one of the big textile mills, which were partly owned by the family, but I don't think they were particularly well off. She was a remarkably beautiful woman, and when I was a little one, there was an old cook in Warnsdorf who had come with her, and my grandmother died when my mother was 13. It must have been typhoid. The water supply in those outlandings wasn't particularly good. And she said to her, "You are now responsible for your father and your brother." And she and this little, tiny little cook called Anna used to keep house for my grandfather and looked after her brother, who was a year or two younger. And it was a very harmonious household, extremely ancient. The flat was like something out of the Biedermeier 1850s, you know. And mostly I remember the morning, the smell of the coffee pot, and there was this blue thing where you would, the mill where you would do something about the coffee beans. And it was really a sort of ideal place for a child to go from a very happy home to another happy home. So that really was a cloudless youth. My mother, I never understood that when she came to live in Gablons, which she was really very much alone, because the women, she had very few friends on her level. This may sound that this is a very snobbish thing to say, but it's true, because she was self-educated, but amazingly intelligent. And if I think of the books which were on our shelves at home, I shudder to think that, you know, if I had to read it, I certainly couldn't. But that was very good, because right from very early on, she made me read things which I can't understand now, that I actually took them in. But I did. And I went to the German grammar school, which I had to leave before the end of the fourth year, because we moved to Prague, which was an extremely good school. And when Hitler came, when things started to be very bad in Germany, and one felt one had to leave, the director and the the chap who was in charge of my class, who was a Latinist, came to my father and said, it's absolutely criminal to take that child out of the school. We personally guarantee for her safety. So how ludicrous in this situation to be so naive, if you think about it with hindsight.
Well, were your family Jewish?
Oh, yes, of course. We were, I mean, we were exactly the sort of Jews, like all the people going to the synagogue for the high holidays. Not my mother didn't go, but we went. And my father was very active in various things to do with the community, but the actual knowledge of Judaism was very much diminished by this generation. But we had a rabbi who came from Hungary, who was an extraordinary man, a very young man, whom the community hated because he introduced modern Hebrew into the service, which was one of the great sins. But he taught us an enormous amount of Jewish history, and he was very bright, and he appeared here during the war in the uniform of an American captain. And it was quite a reunion.
What was his name?
Vida. V-I-D-A, I think. His wife is still alive in the States, apparently, but I have no contact. She must be near 90, I would have said.
You're becoming interested in art.
Oh, my mother was introduced by a friend in Reichenberg who was an elderly spinster, much devoted to my mother, and a journalist, which was rare in those days. And she introduced my mother to Alfred Adler, if that tells you anything.
Oh, who was Alfred Adler?
Alfred Adler was originally the closest collaborator of Freud's, but then they diverged, and he founded a psychoanalytical movement called Individual Psychology, and I had many adherents in this country. And I had lots of letters of when I came over, but I was too shy to approach anybody, which was very stupid with hindsight, of course. But my mother went to Vienna quite often, and they became very friendly. And I just remember he died, it must have been in 1938, and I remember my mother burning her correspondence with him in Prague. But I was interested, because I was very, very left-handed. My mother asked this very awkward, which I still am, so very clumsy. So he suggested that she should put a pencil in each one of my hands. I think that's what started it off, really. I was very little then, you know. He generally gave a lot of advice, some of it very good and some of it very bad, I think. But he was obviously a very impressive man. And he influenced, perhaps, the sort of basic education. My father really did not participate all that much. Mm-hmm. He was a very sweet-natured, mm-hmm. rather busy, elderly businessman, so, you know.
But did your gift become apparent, would you say?
Actually knew whether I had one or not, because I was, when I was a bit older, not very much older, my mother showed what I was producing to a painter called Fred Hartig. He was starving. You can imagine that a German painter in the Sudets, however good he was, who had a wife and two children, didn't have enough to eat, you know. So he said, of course, that I was gifted. But whether I really was or not is, you know, is by now incomplete. It's also irrelevant, because I think you can learn a lot. He taught me until we went to Prague. And he was a very nice man. Again, he survived the war. He was a good old social democrat. And in the end, he painted the portrait of Hitler in order to keep alive. So when he contacted me after the war, I felt I couldn't face anything or anybody who had survived as a German. I never answered him, which is something I regret now very much.
Yes, being brought up in the area you were, the Sudetenland, would you have spoken German mainly?
We spoke mainly German. My mother's family came from a tiny little ancient place called Rychnov nad Kniežno, and she was totally bilingual, but also had always Czech helps in the house, because that was just how it was. And I spoke very good Czech when I was a child, but it just as my German is slipping, so is my Czech much more so. And although I understand everything, I have great difficulties now in forming a reasonably lucid sentence.
I wonder about sort of living in the Sudeten, though. As a child, were you aware of the sort of, were there any tensions, so far as you were aware, between Czechs and...
Between Czechs and Germans?
Yes.
Yes, of course, but I wasn't aware of it. I know it was going on. But for instance, there was no secondary education in Czech in Gablon, so the Czechs who wanted to go to grammar school had to go quite a long way for everything to do with there was the Czechs were trying to superimpose a sort of Czech network, because all their personnel was Czech, the administration and so on. And I had a Czech piano teacher. But on the whole, there wasn't that much mixing. But then it wasn't, when I was little, it didn't seem a problem. But then in the years when there was a big, big unemployment, I think 1929, something like that, the Czechs didn't have enough money. There was nothing for people. They were starving. And it went on for quite a long time. So the ground was ripe for the Nazis to come in. And I personally didn't have a single bad experience. But my brother once came home with the swastika on his head, I remember, when he was very little.
But you didn't experience any anti-Semitism.
I hadn't experienced it in school at all. And I think I was rather insensitive, otherwise I probably would have noticed something. I just didn't. And I was very, very early on picked up by the Zionist Youth Movement. And so my friends were largely members of this. And it was really a question of going for hikes and singing together. And I didn't realize it had any political overtones at all. I made many, many good friends, and there are a few still alive, either here in Israel or in Germany. And we keep a sort of loose contact still.
Did Palestine mean anything to you? You know, you were saying you weren't particularly political,
no.
But was there much talk of Palestine or...
Well, in the family, yes, because my mother's brother and his wife were very early Zionists. They lived in Warmsdorf with my grandfather. And they intended to go to Israel right from the start. And they went in 38 or 37 even. And they both dead now. But my mother was really an old-fashioned liberal who always believed that that everything is going to be all right and things will improve and people are basically good. And it took me a long time to get over this idea. Even while I was in England, I still believed this. So she was quite sympathetic to Zionism, and lots of the people liked her very much. But my father set his face against this. He was actually very German until things began to break. His friends and the people he played cards with, and he went to the cafe house in our house with them. Well, I mean, he grew up in this, and it is very strange, but someone survived Auschwitz told me that when the filtered through that the Germans were losing, I think it probably was still in Terezin, he said, oh, well, I'm going to hire a bus and we will all go back together to Gablons. Now, this means that he was so sure that everything would be back to normal when he got back, which is very strange. But my mother was really basically very sympathetic to all the things that went on in Germany. She helped a lot of social democrats, Germans, not Jews, who came over. Our house was always full of people she was helping. But the idea that, you know, that one didn't feel Jewish never occurred. There was no problem about this at all. Yes? Yes. My mother stayed with my grandfather until she got married, and she got married fairly late. So during the First World War, she was in one stop, and she got so terribly upset about the war and that people went to kill each other that she became a danger to herself, and my grandfather had to lock her up. And she was a remarkable woman. I must say that many people felt this, I think. Mm-hmm.
Was it through your mother that you knew Peter Keane?
Now, this is also very interesting, because my mother's brother in Warnsdorf had a wife called Hilde Frank, and she was the sister of Peter's mother. So even as a small child, we would see him in Warnsdorf. I remember I was certainly younger than eight. He had tonsillitis and wasn't allowed to stay with my grandparents, but he hung out of a window. I presume that was one of the cooks or somebody like that, and he had something wound around his neck. I remember he was always having colds. But much later, when he was in his early teens, he would come to us, and we wrote he already wrote quite interesting things then, and he drew wonderfully well at a very early age. My father wasn't pleased, because he did a caricature of him when he was asleep in his armchair with his cigar. Didn't go down very well. But he started to write an opera, and he asked me to write the music. What we did, I can't remember, but there was a whole verse which is published in this book by Jürgen Serke about the Bohemian villages. I don't know whether you know the book, where he quotes it I can't remember the exact. I'll look it up for you if you want it. Do you want it?
Well, it would the actual verse.
Yeah, the actual verse.
Yes, he wrote the verse, and you wrote the music.
I was supposed to write.
Yes,
the
perhaps music. Later on we could find that.
We'll find it. Yes. So he was very influenced in his reading, I think, by my mother. But the actual friendship with him was when we moved to Prague. We moved to Prague before Munich, because we had somewhere to go. My father's youngest sister had a villa there, and we moved into her house.
Well, was that for political reasons?
That was that because things were very fraught already, and it was pretty clear that the students were probably not going to remain with the Czechs. But then when we got to Prague, my mother was really trying to find out ways whether one could go to Israel, but because the there was something called the Kapitalisten certificate, which meant that you would be allowed in if you paid £1,000, which was a lot of money in those days, but we could have afforded it, but my father didn't want to do this, so they didn't go. Also, my aunt said that if they did it, she would commit suicide if they went. I mean, that was a sort of pressure as well.
At this time, would you have known the Hartmann family?
Well, yes, slightly. There's a photograph I found in my when they were little, and one of them has an arm broken or something. I knew them slightly only in those days.
How were they related to you?
Their grandmother and my father were brother and sister. So it is cousin, one generation removed. But I don't really remember anything much about them at that stage. When the war was over and we looked at all the lists about people who survived, no one in our family had survived except them. So my husband wrote a letter to them via whatever agency it was. I'm the husband of Kate Stravitz, who's explaining the relationship and offering them to come here. And that was in 1946.
Yes, perhaps later on I'll catch up with that story. But at this time you really didn't have much to do with them.
No, we didn't. Their mother would appear regularly once a year in our house on her way to Karlsbad. But I remember a horrendous story about her. She once came in midwinter and there was a big lunch. And I was extremely fond of Morello cherries. And so we had schnitzel and Morello cherries. And after it was snowing, and afterwards there was a sleigh ride. And we had a sledge, and she was sitting on the one corner, I in the middle, and my mama on the other side. And I was virulently sticking to her person fur coat. And I think that sort of smell does not come out. So I remember this tremendous shame of the story. But this is really my only memory of her.
Did you have any contact with refugees from Germany at this time? You were saying your mother helped Social Democrats.
Yes.
These would have been refugees, would they?
Yes. Well, she did. I didn't really come into this. I don't recall anything except seeing people at odd occasions. But just as she was feeding during the Great Depression, she was making soup for loads and loads of people. We lived on the fourth floor, and there was a queue for that soup right from the ground floor. And it never occurred to me to think about these things. Maybe I was too young. It didn't occur to me that this was anything special, she just did it.
If you would have been a child at that time,
yes,
wouldn't you, in the Depression?
Yes.
And 16 you would have been, am I right, in 1939,
yes.
15 in
yes.
1938.
Yes.
Do you remember Munich, the events of Munich 38, and Chamberlain's visits?
I remember very little. I seem to have a sort of amnesia about all the unpleasant things which happened. But that last year in Prague, before the Germans came, was an amazing year for me, because Peter Keen, who was already at the academy, and who was teaching part-time at the Offizina per Gensis, which was run by quite a famous German graphic illustrator, whose name escapes me at the moment, but he worked as an assistant. And he took me around to all his painter friends, and I had this year, which was amazingly rich in sort of formative experiences. He was very friendly with Peter Weiss. You know who he is.
Oh, who is Peter?
Peter Weiss became very famous as a, I think he wrote the Marasart, didn't he? And he had a comparatively easy war because he went to Switzerland, and he was taken in by Hermann Hesse, and he wrote about Peter Kien in his autobiography, which I have. He was a very close friend of his, and they watched after the Germans came, they watched a woman throw herself out of the window right in front of them, which he writes about in this book. I wrote to the Peter Weiss archive because I had written to him and sent him some photographs of Peter, and he never answered. And he's dead now. So they wrote back that they couldn't find the photographs, but they sent me the last letter which Peter wrote from the camp to Peter Weiss. And I think I gave that to the War Museum. I didn't keep any of those papers. I started many years later, I started to collect all the literary remains because the Czechs are holding on to the drawings, and there is a dispute about the drawings because does this belong to this now? I mean, yes, Peter got married just before I left to the sister of a friend of mine, but in the camp he left her in Terezin, and he became very friendly with somebody called Helga Kien, who was his girlfriend, and to whom he gave all his drawings. And then he went to Auschwitz. And her mother was working in the typhoid wing of the hospital and managed to hide the drawings so that they all survived. And after the war, she took them to Prague. When the communists came, she took the drawings to an old aunt of hers, and she went to England or America. She had to leave most of them behind, and the Czechs won't give them back to her. So they are in Terezin now. They called me in actually to identify what was his and what, before I knew about all this. And they are very well kept there. I mean, they are beautifully looked after, but nevertheless, you know, they're not theirs. The paintings are theirs because she only had drawings.